It's another Saturday night in comedy, and mamacita, do we ever have a spicy panel tonight? Two vastly different comics who have both mastered the hilarious art of courting controversy. From a Canadian comic on the rise, tackling some of today's most taboo topics, to an all-star act from the UK who takes punchlines and politics to absurd new heights. This might just be the one that finally gets us canceled. It was Woo-hoo! A nice little 7.5 seasons of radio we had there. I'm Dean Young, and we're, of course, about to go inside the joke.
Let's do this.
Welcome to Inside Jokes on Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
That's life.
Welcome back to Inside Jokes, baby, right here on 640 Toronto, and as always, streaming all across the entire known goddamn universe on, Global News Online. This week's episode is brought to you by absolutely no one, so hit us up. We're open for biz. We're thirsty out there. Inside Jokes, Season 8. Let's do it. You have a food truck, a convenience store, an Italian business, and you might be a distant cousin of one of our producers. Come get it, Toronto. We got our producer, Vince Tedesco, on the air with us. How you doing, buddy?
One of the producer. How about that?
Well, the
how
produ-
about
yeah.
that? Yeah, Paisanis, call us up. We need some Woodbridge, maple.
Yeah, we're not, you know.
We need some sponsorship here.
We're not proud. It's a Canadian comedy radio show.
What a show we have.
Talk radio. Yeah, we're,
It's quite the lineup we have this week, Dino.
We're open. It is an interesting dual panel. We're kind of courting controversy this week, Vince. So first up on the panel, we have a Canadian comic on the fast rise who definitely is no stranger to controversy. There's really not many topics that he won't tackle. He certainly has been very vocal the past couple of years. He did not stop down at all during the pandemic. He was doing all these speakeasy shows and very much talking about things as they unfolded in real time. So that is Ben Mankus. He hasn't joined us in, I think, a couple of seasons on this show. So again, we're going to pick his brain on what his new tour is all about and what he will or won't tackle on stage. And then later on, Vince, a very special guest, Frank Sinatzi, which I got a tiptoe around this, but basically it's kind of brilliant, but this is a comic out of the UK, which again, the UK comedy is very much known for sort of wry satire and, you know, political humor and variety as well in their acts. So Frank Sinatzi is a lounge singer who basically is a parody of Hitler. And he works with these other lounge acts. There's Osama bin Crosby, Tommy Davis Jr.
I love that one.
Dean Stalin. So, yeah. I mean, this is a whole thing that he has going on. But, of course, we have Frank Sinatzi with us later on in the show. So, I mean, yeah, Vince, we're almost at season 8, but this might be the one that finally does it. I don't know.
That's
this might
number
be,
7. We get
this might be the nail in the coffin. And
I love what they're called. They're called the Iraq Pack.
The Iraq Pack, which is great. I want to find out how that whole thing came together. So, again, we have Ben Mankus, and then, if we make it through that, then
Hitler
later on. There you go. All right. All that and more right here on what could be our penultimate episode of Inside Jokes. Welcome back to Inside Jokes, baby, right here on 640 Toronto, and of course, as always, streaming everywhere entire across the whole multiverse where there's Tay Internets on Global News Online. We are, of course, talking to Canadian comic Ben Mankus, who is no stranger to courting controversy. There's not a lot of topics he won't tackle on stage, and of course, he is embarking on a new tour here in Canada. Also, for our listeners, happy COVID anniversary. Today marks the 3-year anniversary of the Pandy, which is what we call it on this show, because let's make that whole thing more fun. 3 years ago today was when the world shut down. Vince, I'm not going to lie, and I'm not going to lie to our listeners. Here in Toronto, part of me kind of misses those bygone days of, like, the entire city being dead quiet and empty. It was kind of nice. I kind of miss that. That's my journey, though. Anyways, Ben Mankus is with us. How are you doing, man?
Good. I'm not celebrating the anniversary.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you.
I mean, yes, the pandemic was no bueno. I got the COVID first time around. That was not pleasant. Just stuck on a couch for 3 weeks and, a lot of
really
questionable farting and stuff like that. But I mean,
questionable
pretty
farting.
Much the one thing about you, Ben, was you are one of the comics, one of the few comics really in Canada and here in this city that, I mean, obviously it shut things down back then, but you kind of just kept going. There was few comics that were like, I don't like to hell with this. I'm not shutting everything down. People want to see shows. I'm still going to do shows. You kind of just like powered through that whole thing. I mean, as much as you can, of course. It didn't stop you, Ben.
Yeah, I just like now that you know, it's over, and now I don't know if you guys know that I'm running for mayor.
I heard that.
Yeah,
that's basically where during the pandemic when I started the park shows and stuff like that. I don't know if people know what we're talking about, but during the pandemic and lockdown, I started shows in a park. So I actually never stopped doing comedy as of June 2020. We just kept doing shows in parks every week and slowly more and more shows and more underground and at the time illegal shows. But yeah, I think a lot of people looking back probably think, wow, why did I stop doing comedy? That was really stupid. All the people, because anybody who kept going or kept their career going or kept, because there were people who were literally like, why don't you just give up? Don't you know it's a pandemic? Don't you know you should just give up comedy and just stop trying to do anything? Like, there's just a very, this sense of like collective quitting where it was like, why don't you also quit on your dreams considering there's, you know, and people are mad about it. And, you know, too bad. A lot of those people probably either quit or should quit comedy. So.
Well, and there was this weird sort of trend that was happening across the board of like COVID shaming. So it'd be like, it'd be like people like follow you down the street being like, why are you out? Why are you at the grocery store? Why are you still working? Why are you trying to have a career? Why are you trying to pay your bills? And it's like this weird policing that was happening culturally. And it's like, that's the opposite of what anybody should be doing. Cause it's like, yeah, if you feel more comfortable and you feel safer putting things on pause and staying at home, fine, but it's also none of your business if other people just want to kind of make life still happen, for God's sake, especially in comedy. Because again, like you said, comics that were still going, I'm going to put on shows, I'm going to work my way around these parameters, I'm going to figure something out to keep going. Those are the comics now who, you know, 3 years after this whole thing started, those are the comics now who are dropping new specials and dropping new albums and going out on tour, because those are the comics that didn't stop down for 3 years and kept doing material in real time. Speaking of which, yes, you are running for mayor, and also you do have a new tour with some dates coming up, so we're going to get into all that and what some of this tour is about. We're going to come back with more of the one and only Ben Bankus right here on Inside Jokes.
The next mayor of Toronto.
Hi, this is Sheba Mason, and you're listening to Inside Jokes.
Back to Inside Jokes, baby, right here on 640 Toronto, and of course streaming all over the world on Global News Online. We are talking to Canadian comic and possible future mayor of Toronto, Ben Bankus, which, by the way, so we kind of touched on this before the break, Ben, before we get into what your upcoming tour is all about. But yes, you are running for mayor of Toronto. Is there something specific in mind you have as far as a platform goes? Like, what's the Ben Bankus ticket all about?
We're bringing back smoking indoors.
Nice.
We're bringing back smoking on patios at the very least. I want to make, you know, I think the city should be more dog friendly. You can't take dogs in any restaurants because of bylaws.
Yeah.
I think that's stupid. Like, if you're a restaurant that doesn't want to have dogs, like, just be like, we don't have dogs, but why is that a bylaw? Like, everybody has a dog in the city. So you should be able to bring your dog into the restaurant and then light a cigarette.
Yeah,
this is a free, it's a free country.
Dogs and cigarettes.
Dogs and cigarettes basically is what we're running on.
There we go.
And then we're going to, you know, and just other things that people obviously hate, like bike lanes. You know, I know there's people who like bike lanes. I don't know who they are. Maybe Uber Eats drivers. But, you know, generally speaking, we're going to get rid of bike lanes. And yeah, there's other things we can do, like, you know, we want to support the new mass immigration, 500,000 immigrants a year coming to Canada. So, you know, what we want to do in Toronto is have minimum tips on Uber. Eats on Uber Eats, not on Uber, because nobody tips on Uber, so we're going to leave that at zero. But Uber Eats, minimum 22% tip for the new Canadians. And yeah, stuff like that. We're just going to, you know, we're going to figure it out. And, you know, Toronto needs to be a fun place. When I grew up, it was a fun place. Before the pandemic, it was a fun place.
Yeah.
The Raps parades and Drake and, you know, Russell Peters is from Toronto. And there's just so many reasons why. Well, he's from Brampton, but, you know, he grew up in the city. And, you know, there's just so many reasons why this is such a great place. And now it's kind of depressing. Everybody's got a mask on. They're offended. They're worried about what you're talking about, what you're saying. Oh, my God, is that guy doing this? Is that guy really lighting a cigarette inside the Eaton Center? You know, or whatever the issue is. But we need to go back to just being a fun place. When Toronto had a bunch of Burger Kings, I don't know if it has to do with Burger King, but when we had more Burger Kings downtown, it was a better place. So I don't know if we can bring back Burger King.
It does kind of feel like it's like,
it'll have to be in a condo.
Stuffy and bureaucratic now. By the way, though, Ben, because I mean, yeah, so you're running for mayor. I mean, and our own tech producer, Katya, is a fan of your comedy. For listeners of the show who are familiar with your comedy, I mean, politics does factor into a lot of what you do. You kind of tackle topics in real time. You were no stranger of talking about vaccines and talking about the pandemic. How much of your own actual beliefs goes into your material on stage? I mean, is there a lot of sort of like truth of your own opinions going into this stuff? Because I mean, you're very good at sort of picking discomfort out of an audience and like making people laugh at stuff that they're kind of hesitant to. But is a lot of that your own opinions going into this stuff?
I don't really know how to answer that question. I mean, that's just, I think it's the same with anybody's stand up. I mean, yeah. Unless you're talking to somebody whose stand up is all about alternative jokes where they're just making stuff, you know, oh, the salt is weird. And I don't know what boring stuff people talk about. I don't even know. You used to do stand up. I don't know what you talked about, but, you know, I basically yes and no. I mean, certain things, obviously it's like when you're with your friends, you say something funny, they don't ask you, do you really mean that?
Yeah,
they just laugh. They just laugh.
And it's not like everybody in stand-up, you're obviously always a dialed-up version of yourself, of course. Right. I mean, you know, you're a more sort of extreme version of yourself in a way, a more potent version of yourself than you are maybe off stage. But of course, yeah, right. a lot of that is of course just your voice coming out. Cause it's not like you're up there in character. You're not doing, you know, you're not a
blackface.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's what Trudeau does. I mean, that's the other thing about, you know, Zelensky obviously, and other comedians who've become politicians, but the idea that Trudeau, the main guy here in this country, has done blackface a million times, has put on every racist costume possible, has literally, you know, he's had a million scandals from, you know, grabbing ass to stealing money to stealing the election, apparently, China involved with that. And then people, you know, and it's like, but Ben Bankus, do you really mean what you say on stage? I mean, does it even matter?
Yeah.
Sorry, I know I'm not supposed to swear, but we can bleep that.
That's fine.
It doesn't matter. Like, yes, certain things, like if I make a joke on stage, like, I don't know, I made a joke the other day where I was like, you know, isn't it funny that Trudeau is joining forces with Jagmeet? It's like he's hanging out with a guy that he likes to dress like once a year or whatever, you know, like, but it, I mean, and it's like, do you mean that? I mean, well, kind of, because he literally does
do that.
Like,
yeah.
He does put on a costume and he's working with a guy who, you know, technically, according to white wokeism, Jagmeet Singh should be the most offended person in the world that Trudeau did blackface and wore a turban. But in reality, they don't give a shit. So I just think that the wokeism in general and the idea that, like, oh, my God, I'm sitting here and it's uncomfortable to listen to this stand up comedian. That means you're like just basically not an adult, because 20 years ago, if you're in the 90s or early 2000s and people were making jokes, like, yeah, so back then what was offensive was like 9/11 jokes. You know what I mean? Like in the early 2000s, you do a 9/11 joke and people would be like, oh, my goodness. But, you know, a lot of people would just still laugh, even though, like, there was no comedians canceled for doing those jokes.
Exactly.
That was part of the whole, you know, we're America. We stay, you know, free speech, screw them. And now it's like, oh, well, yeah, actually, anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of the media.
And I kind of think that hopefully we're swinging back over that, because you make a good point there, because, you know, the whole point of comedy, of stand-up comedy, has always been sitting in that room and leaving the real world at the door for, you know, 90 minutes and being able to laugh at shit that you're scared of maybe the rest of the time, or that nobody's allowed to talk about, but actually to find the funny in that stuff and go, this is okay to laugh at this. And we forgot about that. Even before the pandemic, we were getting into this weird trend where it was getting pretty difficult to tell the difference between a stand-up special and a friggin' TED talk. Everything had to have a message, and everything had to be preachy, and everything had to be on a soapbox, and you had to like think all the same way. It's like, it's okay to go into a comedy club and laugh about stuff that you're uncomfortable with the rest of the time. That's the whole gig. That's the whole point. And I think hopefully after the couple of years of the pandemic, we're getting to a point again where it's like, oh yeah, that's what stand-up's supposed to be about. And I think there's new audiences coming out looking for that.
I think we are, and I think it is. And you know, people, I forget what I was gonna say, but basically you're right. People want to get offended now, but there's really not much. Like, after what we've been through, if you're still getting offended, it's kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, especially honest. It's like, we literally just had a 3-year crash course in life is short, you know, like,
what I was going to say was that part of the reason in Canada, at least, that it has become like that so much is because the government has like so much say in comedy, like not really say, but a lot of comedians, if they don't really have the ambition to be like, I'm going to create my own platforms and create my own podcast and make my own fans and get my own money and sell my own tickets. If you're not willing to do that, and you're just like, well, I'd like to work at CBC or work on This Hour's 22 Minutes or one of the government funded programs or, you know, shows. Or I want to get my stand up on there, then they're going to have to mold it into this stand up that's kind of this woke version of stand up that's not really about the same thing that stand up was about, which is taking uncomfortable topics and talking to people and right to their face, like Lenny Bruce would do. And, you know, you're going into a room of people. Back then, you couldn't even swear, really. Like, swearing was illegal, basically. So, like swearing in public. People want to say like, oh, it was a free country in the 50s. No, you couldn't swear. You would get arrested all the time.
Yeah. You had comics like Lenny Bruce, and you had writers like the Beat Writers and all these people they would literally go on trial for this stuff.
Right.
It was obscenity and even trials, which also we try to do to Mike Ward here in Canada. But, you know, that was a bit of a different thing.
Yes.
And he won. It took him a few years, but he won.
But the thing is, the point, not to cut you off, but the point is that people love it and people want that type of comedy. Like you said, the people who want it really, really want it. And they're going out to seek it. And that's why, you know, I'm going on tour, Permission to Laugh tour. And it's becoming, you know, it's almost sold out because people are just excited for it. And the same reason that they're excited to go see a Leaf game and then see a fight in the Leaf game. It's not, you know, it's not like I love fighting and I love when people fight each other. It's not like the same thing. I love bad language and I love when somebody is super rude or super mean to and talks about different groups or whatever. No, that's not what it is. They want to let loose. They want to hang around somebody that talks the way that they remember people used to talk when they just didn't give an F.
Yeah.
And shot with each other.
And that's the beautiful thing about, I mean, because also, you know, we spent the last couple of years obviously just like streaming specials and listening to podcasts and da 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 da. That's the beautiful thing about live stand-up is there is that element of like, it's now, it's in the moment. There is always that element of like, anything can happen because the comic is sort of riding the wave of that room. And like, yeah, you have your honed material or whatever, but there's that element of like, the comic might go after the audience, the comic might do this. Live comedy has that beautiful element of like, it's right now and it's in the moment. There is sort of that element of danger in a way that kind of makes it exciting. But anyways, Ben Bank is possible future mayor of Toronto. Before we let you go, so where can we catch some dates on this tour, grab tickets, catch you online, all that good stuff?
BenBankas.com, BenBankas.com. You can get tickets to all of the live shows there. The tour kicks off next week, the 22nd of March in Ottawa. There's still some tickets left for the 22nd of March in Ottawa. 23rd of March in Ottawa is sold out. 24th, 25th, we're in Carleton Place. 29th, we're in Victoria, BC. There's still tickets for that. 30th of March, Surrey, BC is sold out. Vancouver, April 1st is sold out. The Late Show still has tickets. And then we're going to Kelowna, Edmonton, Calgary, Fort McMurray, Red Deer, nice. Winnipeg, Saskatoon, Regina, and then actually coming back to Ontario, we're going to be in Kingston, Ontario. So if you want to get tickets to Kingston, Ontario, May the 4th be with you. That's pretty much what's happening. We're adding some more dates, Montreal in June and stuff like that.
There we go. I love it, man. I'm excited to hear what happens with this whole campaign, but check out those tour dates here. BenBankus.com. Literally yes. Going coast to coast with this tour. Ben
Bankus Show. Check out the Bankus Show on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, the Bankus Show.
There we go, the Bankus Show. Tune into that. Catch him live. There's dates all over the entire country, and hit up BenBankus.com. And, you know, when it comes time, toss him a vote for mayor. Why not? Smoking and dogs. Let's do it. Ben Bankus, thank you so much, man.
This is Frank Sinatra. I must insist that you listen to Inside Jokes, as otherwise one of us is going to die, and it's not me.
Welcome back to Inside Jokes right here on 640 Toronto, and of course streaming all over the world, everywhere where there's the internet, on Global News Online. Thank you again to Ben Bankus. Check out his upcoming tour dates, benbankus.com. Listen to the Bankus Show. Now we are switching gears, picking up a worldwide audience. We are going all the way over to the UK to a comic who has built a massive audience, transforming untouchable politics into parody gold, quite frankly. We have Peter Perk, a.k.a. Frank Sinatra, which, by the way, just to sort of preface this for our listeners at home, you basically are part of this group, the Iraq Pack, where you're all doing caricatures of classic crooners as some of history's
dictators.
Most glorious dictators. Yeah. There we go. Mm. You are, of course, Hitler.
Yeah, not so popular.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to do dictator parodies, that's kind of like, that's the main guy right there.
With the creme de la creme. Yeah.
That's all time. Well,
you can imagine, guys, in this country, it's quite difficult at the moment. We're going through a strange transition when it comes to comedy. Everything's a little bit wokey in the
UK. Same here.
Oh, is it? Yeah, well, it's you know, I did the Galway Comedy Festival recently, recently, and I had problem even with some of the acts. Weren't sure whether to perform with me or not because they didn't really understand the parody, as it were, behind it. And you see, I was a swing singer, first of all, and I sounds a bit weird when you say swing singer, but it's all swing music, you know, not swing both ways. But I actually was at the Glastonbury the festival with the London Swingphonia Big Band in 2001, 2002, and this is where I came up with this idea of, you know, dictators being great crooners, because I was reading some, I do a lot of straight Sinatra, you know, straight Frank Sinatra covers, yeah. And I was singing with the big band, and thought I'd do my research on Frank Sinatra, read a couple of books, and I read Rat Pack Confidential about all the characters. Dean Martin seemed nice, you know, off screen, Sammy Davis, Joey Bishop, Peter Lawford, all the characters, apart from Frank, who had a really checkered past, as you know, involved with the mafia, etc.
Yeah.
A friend of mine was, was a drug runner for a while and money runner. And he said, well, were you doing your research? Is it going well? And I said, yeah. I said, didn't realize he was such a Nazi, Frank. And I went, Frank's a Nazi. What would he sing? And there's one joke it started with. But as Chortle says, it became a joke uberalis, because I didn't realize until I started, we could have a Nancy Sinatra doing jack boots and made for walking. That would be fun. And I created all these other characters. So I created like an Iraq pack, because at the time, Saddam Hussein was still in, you know, people were still talking about him. And Saddam E. Davis Jr., Saddam, you know, arranged marriage. Oh, that could work. And then I thought, Dean Stalin, Dean, like a Russian Dean Martin. Everybody Murders Someone Sometimes, you know, and all these songs started flicking into my head. I was like, oh my goodness, there's a whole back catalog of stuff here just waiting to be tapped.
Well, and it is kind of funny you say, you know, this whole courting controversy thing. Sure, yes, but I mean, we never used to be afraid of this stuff, and you know, people losing sight of the fact that this is pure satire, pure parody, yeah. Which I think we're in a time that is so ripe for that, because we just have come out of this time where we've all been so isolated and sheltered and watching this terrible news cycle. I mean, Mel Brooks was never afraid of doing that on screen, and we used to, you know, audiences used to flock to the theater to watch that en masse. It's like it's almost like we've forgotten this, that that's the point of comedy, and you know, it's okay to sort of put the real world on pause and just be able to collectively laugh at this stuff. Yeah. Because it takes the power out of it.
Yeah, of course. And the other thing as well is, I don't know if you know, I was actually supposed to do the warm-up for the Producers Theater show in Berlin. I have performed a lot in Berlin, funny enough, more so 10, 15 years ago than in the UK. People wouldn't touch me at comedy clubs, or if they did, I'd be the last act on, and they'd say, just do 10 because it's a bit near the mark. But I point out the mark no longer exists. It's the euro. Anyway, that's another joke. But right, they did. I mean, the thing is that there's so much, so many puns and this that they're associated with, you know, now we just like to mock dictators. I mean, you know, anybody who takes it seriously has got a sense of humor failure, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I have been attacked twice by, like, you know, once somebody tried to attack me on stage, another time I, you know, but I think that's because they didn't really understand what they were watching, or they were just off their heads, you know.
Someone tried to attack you?
Yeah, I've been attacked twice. Yeah, once down in, I was doing a sort of indoor circus theater thing in Halloween, and somebody, it was just a guy, and who was off, I think it was off his face, and just saw me with my, because you know, I put the old moustache on, and you know, and he just saw me as Hitler. I think that's all he could focus on. You know, he's like, oh, and didn't see the comedy, and I think he was a bit wasted. So I think, you know, because you know you're performing to people, you don't know what state of inebriation they're in a lot of the time, and you know,
which by the way, I mean, one thing we were talking about earlier in the show is here in Canada and here in the US, there is sort of this sense in live comedy right now where audiences are really, they're sort of eager for comedy that does push the envelope again a little bit, because everybody's just been really sort of pent up for the last couple of years and stuck in the same news cycle and all that. So comics, or people do kind of want edgy comedy again. For you, I mean, when you're performing in the UK, has audience tastes changed a little bit to you? Because the UK, I mean, yes, everybody collectively as a global society, we all went through the pandemic together, but it's been a rocky few years in the UK politically, and there's a time of a lot of change happening over there, of course. Mm-hmm. Does it feel like audiences are sort of eager to just go and watch live comedy that does push boundaries a little bit and be able to just laugh and put the real world on pause for a bit?
Well, I performed in cabaret clubs, because the comedy clubs, as I say, a few years ago wouldn't touch me. I put on my own shows, like, you know, Frank's White Christmas, you know, tongue in cheek, at the 100 Club in London, where a lot of rock bands play, and we were selling out. I mean, we sold out, you know, because people who liked edgy comedy and, you know, comics and performers who actually do just push the envelope a little bit, and you know, and as long as everybody takes a hit. I'm not singling out particular. In fact, my agent, Mike Lee's Jewish. I mean, he's a Jewish agent. And that's helped me, really, because I've got a Jewish agent, and I perform with comedians over here like Sol Bernstein, who was a Jewish comic, a bit like Jackie Mason style, you know. And yeah. So I'm on the same bill as them, and I purposely get them on the bill. So people, there's no, you know, it's quite clear that I am just parodying, you know, the right, as it were.
That's the beauty of it. Now, Frank or Peter.
Which, by the way, I have to do a quick mention. We just had Jackie Mason's daughter, Sheba Mason, on the show last
night.
Yeah,
we just had her on last week.
I don't know if you heard about it. I was here, she was there.
Now, Peter, you in situations like this, you want to be referred to as Peter, but are you more method on stage? You are Frank Sinatra?
Yeah, well, it's character comedy, isn't it? You transform. I do other characters. I do a Tom Jones stand-up act in an old people's home, because they're all old singers now, called Tom Moans, you know, moans about everything. And I've reworked the songs for him. So it's all kind of like, you know, I can sing. I would start off as a singer.
It is your voice, right?
Yeah, and I've got a dark sense of humor. I'm going up to the Edinburgh Fringe again this year, and I'm doing a straight Sinatra show in the day and the twisted Iraq Pack Frank Sinatra show in the evening. So, you know, and I called it my comedy blitzkrieg in the evening, you know, so it's kind of like, and it's the, and everybody, as I said, everybody takes a hit, you know, I make sure that everybody has an insult somewhere down the line, whatever creed or.
It's sure genius. For the listeners that aren't grasping at all, like, Peter gets dressed up in full Hitler gear, correct? And yeah, you're an announcer, much like Frank Sinatra. You sing the tunes.
Yeah, I've got a picture here. I'm going to put that there. They sort of focus them up there. There you go.
There you go.
That's my album, My Way on a Steinway.
Well, trust me, I'm going to plaster your picture all over the internet. Because I think you're a genius. And I fell in love with you on your rendition of Third Reich, which was...
Yeah, very old song, actually. I wrote that back in 2001, Vince. 2001 or 2002, a long time ago, 22 years ago.
I rolled on the floor laughing, literally. Yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah. Do you know, you'd be surprised how many times I get booked by, I did a Jewish birthday party in Chelsea, which is the other day. And the Jews, they get it. They're just, oh yeah, it's therapy for us. You know, it's fantastic therapy. Do another song. Because I've written umpteen songs. I've even got another album. I haven't actually put it out yet. I'm still working on the final tracks of it. But it's the gift that keeps on giving, this particular one. It's awesome. It's just in this society. Funny enough, I did a gig it was a year ago now, Comedy Unleashed. They were part of GB News. The guy there, Andy Doyle, asked me to come on and do a set at his Comedy Unleashed, which is the backyard comedy club in Bethnal Green, London. And he said, just do your set. And I did 15 minutes. And it just went viral. He filmed it. And it's got about half a million. If you look on YouTube, it's got a half a million or something hits already. And, you know, that period of time. And somebody's even stuck me on TikTok. One of my songs. I'm not even on TikTok because, you know, can't stand the Chinese. So I can't even stand the chat. So I'm not on TikTok, but somebody's posted some stuff on there as well, and that's gone a bit viral. But it's funny how things come around, isn't it? I mean, a few years ago, you know, comedy, as you said, Dean, the comedy is, and it's now seems to be the time where people say, right, I've had enough now. I really have had enough of this lefty wokey comedy, you know.
Yeah.
It's banal, isn't it?
Well, and it sort of was getting to a place where everything felt just very preachy, like everything had to have a lesson and a moral attached to it, and everything felt like a university lecture in a lot of ways, you know. And I think one thing that we forget about in comedy is trusting an audience. Like we got into this weird trend, especially pre-pandemic in comedy, where we were policing ourselves and policing each other without just going, why don't we just let the audience experience this stuff and judge for themselves? Audiences are smarter than we give them credit for. People want to see parody and satire. You can't avoid everything just on the assumption that one person might not like it. Not everything is supposed to be for everybody in the first place anyways.
No. In fact, I get some people come along to my shows. I've got these sort of groupies, mostly, so actually, funny enough, guys who just like, they've been, you know, they studied history and stuff, and they just love what I've done with the actual act. And sometimes people come along and they've seen my act umpteen times. I always change it a little bit to make it interesting for myself, never mind other people. But they invite other people and they just people watch. They're not watching me. They're watching other people watch me. And I think that's interesting as well, because it's like, look what I've discovered, this guy here. And let's see how other people interpret what he's putting out there, you know?
And it's refreshing to just see people come back to that, especially after the last couple of years. All right, we're going to get into it after the break. We're going to come back with more Peter Perk, a.k.a. Frank Sinatra, right here on Inside Jokes.
Hey, this is not Arnold Schwarzenegger, and you're listening to Inside Jokes on 640.
Welcome back to Inside Jokes, right here on 640 Toronto, and of course streaming all over the entire multiverse on Global News Online. We have a very infamous comic on the air with us right now, Peter Perk, aka Frank Sinatra. By the way, I mean, nobody's really doing this sort of political parody the way that you're doing it. For our listeners just tuning in, of course, you formed the Iraq Pack, so it is a send-off on classic crooners and lounge singers, but all very much in character as, you know, history's most infamous dictators. By the way, who are your influences coming up? Because in Canada, we have, you know, we're sort of this weird stepchild between British comedy and American stand-up, because of course English comedy has this beautiful, rich tradition of character and of improvisation and of sketch. And of course, the panel shows and the variety shows. So much of that influenced us here in Canada. Who were sort of your big influences?
Well, to be honest, I grew up watching Monty Python, really. I mean, that's from my age. I mean, I brought up in that and I thought, oh my God, this is so surreal. It's incredible. And that sort of comedy, I mean, even those films like Life of Brian, Holy Grail, I mean, they're still right up there in my top five films of all time. Anyway, and it's just the way they just blew apart. I mean, we had the Goons. Remember the Goons? A little bit before my time, actually. But some friends of mine always referenced them, the Goons, and they were forerunners as well. But Monty Python seemed to take it another level. And the beauty with them is that it was quite surreal, their comedy. So it opened your mind a little bit to the possibilities of what can be done with comedy. You see what I mean? So they were big players in my early days. I mean, I went to see Steve Wright, you know, the old American comedian, Steve Wright, the guy who does the talk tonight there. And I went to see him and I seen Emo Phillips and stuff. So I am aware of the other comic. And it's all an influence, isn't it? Really, other comics influence you. But it started with Monty Python. That's what gave me the sort of on the comedy side. When I started with Bingo first, with a comedy Bingo. That's where the Pete Perkay comes from. And I started a Bingo show. The cabaret, when I'd mess around with the numbers and have sort of references, stupid comedy references to the numbers to make Bingo more interesting. I'm going back 30 years now, 35 years. And then I'd introduce comedians like Paul Foot. I gave him one of his first ever gigs, Paul Foot, the comedian. And I introduced them into the shows, but they had to be a little bit different, the comedians. You see what I mean? Not just regular stand-up. They had to have something about them. And that's what got my connection going with that. And I thought, singer, bit of cabaret. And that's what we're missing, I think, at the moment, a bit more variety in comedy, bringing the variety back in. I don't know if it's the same in Canada, but...
Yes and no, because actually it's a conversation we've had on this show, because, you know, especially here in Toronto, but there's always sort of this divide of like, I only do stand-up, I only do sketch, I only do improv. I think one thing the pandemic forced some people in comedy into was melding those worlds a bit more and spinning multiple plates just sheerly out of a necessity to survive and keep an audience going. But now we are seeing more of that overlap now where comics are like, you know, I could do sketch, I could do improv, I could be in character. Because, there is that rich tradition of variety in English comedy.
Yeah. Yeah, there is, very much so. If you go back to, you know, the days, the 60s and 70s, I mean, look at the silly slapstick Carry On movies, for example, that was so popular. I mean, even though you probably, you know, Benny Hill, who was all over our TVs, very slapstick, still massive in Eastern Europe. You know, that sort of, and quite different Norman Wisdoms of the world, you know, started with that sort of slapstick comedy. All completely different styles, but all, you know, they all have their value and all have their, and over the time, you know what it's like, guys, you get older and you pick bits and pieces, don't you, from different things and use it in your act. I mean, a lot of stuff I've is taken from other things. But at the end of the day, I mean, I don't think I would have started this. I think with the Sinatra thing, if you can't, the act wouldn't have worked if I couldn't have sung. You see, this thing being a Sinatra impersonator, otherwise it loses something. You know what I mean? But, you know, as a performer in general, I feel a bit disingenuous about putting it on if I was a really poor Frank Sinatra impersonator, you know.
Well, and it is funny for us in Canada because, you know, I always liken stand-up to punk music in a way, because there's always that conversation of, well, who did it first, America or the UK? Who did it better, America or the UK? So it always reminds me of that. And in Canada, we're sort of stuck in the middle where like this weird cross-pollination of both, like both sides of the pond are such a huge influence on what we do here in Canada. Mm. So that's always been a rich part of our tradition. Anyways, Peter Perk, a.k.a. Frank Sinatra, we really could go on all day with you. This is fantastic. This is a rare treat for us.
Are there any plans of coming to Canada anytime soon?
I'd love to. By the way, I forgot to mention the Young Ones in the 80s. They were the anti-stop. They're the kickback. And, of course, Rick Mayall, Peter Richardson came, who was part of the original comic strip, came to my one of my shows in London. And he said, it's a shame Rick Mayall isn't alive because he loved his Sinatra and he loved his dark comedy. Rick Mayall, he said he would have loved your show. He was one of my heroes at the time, Rick Mayall. But anyway.
So Canada in the books, yes or no?
Well, if I'm invited now, don't you have a Montreal Comedy Festival? Do you?
We do. We have Just for Laughs. Yeah.
They're a little PC, but I mean...
If I'm invited and you can organize it, I'll come and do it, but...
Just hop on the plane with Jimmy Carr and come on over.
There you go.
Yeah,
he's over there a lot. By the way, so Frank Sinatra, where can we catch you online? Listen to some
Give us a little Frank Sinatra and where can we find all your social media?
All most of my stuff at the moment is on YouTube. You just put Key and Frank Sinatra, S-A-N-A-Z-I, that was for you. S-A-N-A-Z-I, Frank Sanazzi. So the joke is, Frank's a Nazi. That's where it came from. You see?
Ah, okay. Here we go.
Frank's a Nazi. So that's why it doesn't scan as well as Sinazi. But if Frank Sinazzi was the original joke, and I couldn't leave it, the original joke, so I had to change it to Frank Sinazzi.
You're kind of debating that earlier. All right, excellent. Mm. So Frank Sinazzi, so all things on YouTube.
All over YouTube, there's loads of stuff. And I've got my own channel under Peter Perkey, Peter Perkey Productions. You'll see all on there. And as I said, I'm doing the full run at the Edinburgh Fringe. So, you know, I'm being booked to do some shows in Sweden, actually. The good old blonde boys in Sweden. It's all good at the moment. And, long may it continue.
Mm. There we go. Peter, a.k.a. Frank, thank you so much for joining us here on Inside Joke.
I salute you.
We salute you. Thank you so much for joining us. That is our show. That is our panel. Don't forget, you can listen to all of our episodes every Saturday night and stream them all right back to the dawn of time on Global News Online. That is our show. We'll be back next week.
Hi, this is Alicia Carusi, and you're listening to my aunt, Sandra Carusi's Comedy RX.
This week, you're listening to Frank Sinazzi.
Third Reich. That's what all the people say. I took Poland in April, then France in May. And you know, I was starting to crumble. Then I took those checks in June. I see Third Reich. As funny as it may seem, lift the music up. I just got mine cakes, watching nations scream. But I won't let it get me down. 'Cause it would soon be my world,
my world,
spinning around. I've been a poet, a painter, lover, dictator, Trevor Braun.
I was king.
I've been up, down, servo and drought, and I know one thing. Each time I find myself
at the door, right in front of my face,
pick myself up and start an Aryan race.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.